This is part two in my podcast on the history of storytelling that I'm doing as part of my senior project at Minnesota New Country School. Previously, I talked about the origins of storytelling and the Epic of Gilgamesh, as well as taking a look at the origin of the flood story. This time, I'm going to be looking at how stories evolve over time, and I'm going to be doing that by examining the character from Arthurian legend of Sir Kay. Arthuriana, or Arthurian legend, is a general term used to refer to stories regarding the figure of King Arthur and related characters. With that said, I think it's important that I talk about why I chose Arthurian literature in particular, as well as Sir Kay as a character. Arthurian literature is far from the oldest stories out there. The oldest surviving stories that feature the character of King Arthur are from the 13th century. The character of King Arthur is believed to originate from Wales, what is now Wales, then would have been a Celtic community. It's not exactly known who King Arthur was, if he was a real person, but it's believed that he would have lived around 500 AD. Although these stories may have started as a way to genuinely attempt to record and document history, or legends that were stemmed from history, the narrative of King Arthur quickly became something else entirely, and sort of became a canvas on which writers could work with an already existing format and framework featuring a particular sort of world, storytelling, and characters that they could use to create narratives as they saw fit. Because of this, there really is no one single version of Arthurian legend. There are a handful of what are considered primary sources, or primary versions of the story, and while they do have many things in common, they are still very different. And as you go further into the modern day, they become only more differentiated from these archaic sources. So saying that there's one King Arthur story is just a complete non-starter. There's no reason to try and act like there's one cohesive narrative surrounding King Arthur, but rather there are many dozens of narratives that have been created in different times and places for the last nearly a millennia, and by looking at them and comparing and contrasting, you can find certain narrative threads that are able to form a sort of line or a cohesion between specific characters and how they're portrayed in these stories. For our purposes, the first time Kay appears in any media is in the Welsh story of Cwllycan Olwen. Cwllycan Olwen is an interesting myth, and it is very much so archetypical for a Welsh or Celtic story in many ways. But it is also the beginning of what we now understand as Arthuriana, in the sense that, chronologically speaking, it is the first time that Arthur, the character of King Arthur, makes an appearance in any stories. The story centers, however, on the eponymous Prince Cilych, who has been cursed by his stepmother to only be able to marry the woman Olwen, which wouldn't necessarily be a problem, except that Olwen is the daughter of a fearsome giant named Yzbaddaden. Even after finding Yzbaddaden, which is an adventure in of itself, he refuses to allow Cwllych to have her hand unless he can complete a series of tasks, each of which is borderline, if not entirely, impossible. Faced with this trial, Cilych enlists the help of his cousin, Arthur, who himself has 200 knights who will assist them. Among these are Kay, Bedwyr, and Gwlychme, all of whom would become other characters within Arthurian legend, Kay being Kay. The story goes into considerable detail about all of the extraordinary abilities of Arthur's knights, but even among them, Kay may have the most abnormal. Among these abilities are his ability to hold his breath for 9 days and 9 nights, and to grow to immense sizes whenever he pleases. In addition to this, his body radiates an incredible heat, such that he can act as fuel to fires, and that anything he would hold, even in a storm, will stay completely dry. Kay assists Arthur in completing many of the tasks for Killick. However, when the task of retrieving the beard hairs of the aptly named Dulus the Bearded comes to Kay, he's concerned, as Dulus is an extremely fearsome warrior. Because of this, Kay comes up with more of a strategy rather than simply fighting and killing Dulus and taking his hairs that way. He approaches Dulus as he's sleeping and traps him in a pit, then kills him and takes his beard hairs. When he returns to Arthur with the hairs in tow, Arthur playfully makes fun of him, saying that the reason why he had to trap Dulus is because in a fair fight, Kay would have lost. However, Kay takes this very poorly and decides to leave Arthur's court forever afterwards. According to the narrator, he doesn't return even when Arthur begins to lose political and military power and is eventually overthrown. Now this gives us a look at the character of Kay as he was seen in Welsh circles, but at later times, the character was incorporated into what is more obviously recognizable as King Arthur mythos. And that would occur in large part due to Geoffrey of Monmouth, who was a monk that wrote a not exactly historically accurate book about the history of Britain. He would more or less create the modern perception of King Arthur. And for a long time, it was fairly widely accepted as actual history. This was written around the 12th century, so the 1100s, and it was generally accepted as history in Britain until about the 1500s. In this account, Kay is a loyal knight to King Arthur, and alongside Arthur and Bedivere, who is the now adapted version of the previous Bedwyr, they defeat the giant of Mount St. Michael.
Kay also serves as King Arthur's seneschal, which means that he deals with a lot of matters of domestic government. Most notably, he manages land and taxes. Through this account, we get an image of Kay as a knight who was very loyal to Arthur, being one of the first members of the Round Table, and also an integral part of Arthur's court, especially since he was the seneschal, which meant that, although he probably couldn't go on a lot of the same quests as other knights, he was imperative in keeping the actual stability of the court and Britain as a whole in check.
French author Chrétien d'Artois would depict Kay in a different way. Chrétien's Kay is, for the most part, entirely incompetent at not only being a knight, but even at generally being a member of King Arthur's court. Kay is also very rude. When Gareth, one of the sons of King Lot, comes to the court of King Arthur, but cannot state his name due to the instructions of a quest he's been sent on, Kay sends him to work in the kitchen. After some time, Gareth gets an opportunity to prove his worth as a knight, and is generally praised by the people around him. When Sir Kay is asked why he treated him so rudely, Kay tells a blatant lie, and says that the reason he treated Gareth this way is because he knew that Gareth would become a knight, but had to be directed in the right way. Stories also tell of Kay striking a woman after she praised the naive Percival, claiming that he would eventually become the greatest knight in the world. Either because he was worried that Percival's ego would get him into trouble if this comment were let to slide, or because he was frustrated with the fact that Percival, a knight who was quite literally raised in the middle of nowhere in the woods, was already considered a greater knight than he was, one of the senior members of King Arthur's court. Percival would later repay this by unhorsing Kay in combat and breaking his shoulder. Another story has Kay be attacked by three knights, and unsuccessfully try to fend them off before being rescued by Lancelot, who defeats them all swiftly. Later that same day, Lancelot would have to exchange armor with Kay so that Kay could return to Camelot in disguise and not be accosted by knights on the way there. In another one of Chrétien's stories, the unfinished Perlevaux, Kay is much more malicious than he is seen in these other appearances.
Although Perlevo is not generally considered to be canon in the Arthurian legend due to its somewhat strange characterization, not limited to Kay himself, as well as being unfinished, it's worth mentioning because in this story, Kay is outwardly villainous. Upon coming across Loholt, who is a son of King Arthur, lying on the ground next to a slain giant in the woods, Kay decides to kill Loholt, who is presumably asleep, and claim that he was the one who defeated the giant. Kay is praised for his actions and life goes on as normal, but some months or years later, someone comes to the court of King Arthur bearing a box, saying that only a chosen person can open the box. Everyone attempts to open it, including Arthur himself, but to no success. When they ask Kay to open it, mostly as a joke, he is willing to do so. But he is able to open it, and inside is a piece of paper indicting him for having slain Loholt in cold blood and taken the glory of killing the giant. At this point, Kay runs from the court of King Arthur and is never seen again. Now, it's not immediately obvious as to why Chrétien d'Artois wrote Kay this way, but there's a couple theories. Perhaps the most obvious, but also one that might end up simplifying things a bit too much, is just that Chrétien d'Artois did not like the character of Kay. This doesn't make a whole lot of sense, as not liking the character seems like it would more so lead to Kay not being a part of the stories whatsoever, as opposed to a villainous factor in the stories. Another, I think, more plausible theory is that Chrétien decided to make Kay incompetent and generally unliked in order to better show off other characters that Chrétien wanted to give the spotlight to. As I mentioned earlier, Chrétien invented the characters of Lancelot and Percival, and so by making Kay weaker and more boorish, it emphasized how noble and powerful Lancelot and Percival were.
Maybe Kay's most notable appearance is in Gerard de Amiens' novel, The Romance of Escanor. In it, Kay is one of two main characters, and this is perhaps the only piece of classical Arthurian literature that has Kay not only as a main character, but also has Kay as the subject of a romantic plot. In this story, Kay falls in love with a woman named Andrevet, who is the princess of the kingdom of Northumbria. Her father has recently passed, and so her uncle is now the Duke of Northumbria. Although normally someone in this standing would have no issue marrying a knight like Kay, her uncle does not allow it, as he wants to marry her off for political benefits so that he can expand the influence of Northumbria. However, after overcoming multiple hardships, such as miscommunications and physical distances, Kay and Andrevet are able to end up together. Kay and Andrevet are very similar in a lot of ways. Most notably, they both have rather short tempers, and are liable to go off on people who in some way upset them. This isn't necessarily seen as a bad thing by the story, rather just as a trait of their characters. And it actually calls into question a certain element that is otherwise unaddressed in a lot of Arthurian literature from the time. See, although modern stories often equate the role of being a knight with one of being a paragon of chivalry and a general do-gooder, the actual truth is very different. Knights, oftentimes, were just as bad, if not worse, than any other person in their situation, as in many situations, a knight could use their political leverage and status as a way to get away with things that a common person wouldn't be able to. Through Kay and some other characters' reservations about what it means to be a knight and the way they go about doing what they do, it opens the door for an interesting sort of political commentary that isn't always seen in these sorts of stories. Perhaps the most famous version of the Arthurian legend is the one that's presented in Sir Thomas Malory's Le Morte d'Arthur. In this story, Kay takes on a particularly interesting role. Arthur is the biological and legitimate son of the former king of the Britons, Uther Pendragon. However, as a child, he is given to the knight Sir Ector to be raised by Merlin. Sir Ector already has a son, and this son is Kay, making Kay Arthur's foster brother.
Kay makes very few appearances in this story, however, he is a fairly important character at the beginning. The story begins with Kay going to a tournament, but forgetting his sword along the way. Because of this, he tells Arthur to go out and get him a sword, but the first sword that Arthur comes across and has access to is the Sword in the Stone, that can only be drawn by the future king of the Britons. Arthur draws it easily, not realizing what it actually is, and brings it back to Kay, who recognizes it immediately. For a time, Kay deliberates on whether or not he should claim that he drew the sword. It's unlikely that people would believe Arthur over him, even if he tried to actually tell the truth. But ultimately, Kay decides that he'll tell his father that Arthur drew the sword, and that's when Arthur's reign as the King of the Britons actually begins. Kay typically falls somewhere in between his depictions in early Arthurian literature as a powerful and noble knight, and Chrétien de Troyes' depiction of a more hot-headed, rude, and occasionally villainous Kay. The prevalence of the villainous Kay is not so pronounced in modern Arthurian literature. Oftentimes he tends to be a disagreeable or unkind person, but not someone with malintent or any desire to, say, betray Arthur. Because of this, Kay is put in an interesting position, not unlike how he's portrayed in The Romance of Escanor. He is not an ideal knight by any means, but his nature as a more critically thinking and observant rather than action-oriented individual means that he fills a role that the other knights of the Round Table are unable to. In Phyllis Ann Carr's novel, The Ideals of the Queen, Kay plays the role of a detective, trying to discover the secret behind who poisoned a knight of the Round Table during a banquet. As with all stories, exactly what someone takes away from it is entirely subjective. But I think that looking at Kay is extremely enlightening, especially because it shows us not only how vastly a story can change over time, but even just between different authors. Remember that perhaps the two most distinct depictions of Kay, those from Chrétien de Troyes and those from de Amiens, were made around the same time, and even both by French authors. That more or less concludes what I have to say about Kay. As with the previous part, there will be some links and resources that you can do further reading on this topic, especially on Kay himself, and look into it more if you're so interested. The next part will be about what I believe the future of storytelling is, as well as its importance. It's going to be a bit more freeform, and probably a bit shorter than this episode and the first episode, but I hope you enjoy it.